G'day, mate. Film Threat. It's Australian for fuck you. Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I am Chris Score. I'm the editor, publisher of filmthreat.com. I'm also sometimes known as That Chris Score. And I'm joined by, finally, Anthony Ray Bench.
Reunited once again.
Well, it took long enough. Yes, we have been, in our travels, we have been in separate places. You were sick for a while. I mean, you were deathly ill.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say deathly, but I was bedridden.
Yeah, you were bedridden. Yeah. I've been traveling almost every weekend. Someone mentioned, because I just got back from Dragon Con, someone mentioned that I'm like the middle square on a bingo card when you go to a comic convention. Like, you just...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always there, so I'm like the middle square there. But Dragon Con was amazing. It was, I mean, it's definitely like... reminds me of Mardi Gras, because it really is just about drinking and partying in the hotels. And having said that, it also has probably, for my money, some of the best panels you will ever see at a convention. You know, it's not about things like the big brands being there, the big companies having a display like Marvel and whatnot. It's like a bunch of guys saying, we're going to do the fiction track, and we're going to talk about novelizations. We're going to talk about filmmaking. We're going to talk about science as it relates to global climate change. It's a really, I mean, it's everything from scientists to different lifestyles and religion. It really is like a great convention when it comes to their panels. And I did 7 panels there. It was kind of nuts.
I hear it also has like the best cosplay. Is that true?
The best cosplay I've ever seen. I saw a Quint that was walking around. You can see it on my social feed on Twitter or Instagram, but it's a guy dressed as Quint that was carrying
around
a chalkboard.
Bring back Jaws the Ride.
He was carrying around a chalkboard that said, bring back Jaws the Ride, and he was about to scratch the chalkboard. And then I saw like Dune, someone dressed as a Dune sandworm. I've always wanted to dress as like someone in a Dune still suit. I think that would be pretty cool. One of the Fremen.
If it worked, that'd be even better.
Yeah, well, it'd be a very hot costume. And then I saw people dressed as Logan's Run, and then so many other clever ones I can't even get into it. There was a gathering of people dressed as Game of Thrones characters that was amazing. But it's like you're hardcore geeks. Like you can see someone, you know, walking around in a Zardoz costume with those red thigh-high boots that Sean Connery wears. Just look up Sean Connery Zardoz, and you'll see how he dresses in this old sci-fi movie. And you'll see people dressed up. There's like Zardoz meetups. It's people there are legit into sci-fi. Now, I'm not talking about people who are like, I'm into Marvel and Star Wars, though I've never read a comic book. Okay, fuck those people, because that's a lot of people at conventions now, which is fine. It's great. The tribe can only grow bigger, but the people in Atlanta, Georgia are amazing, and they are the hardcore, old school science fiction, fantasy, comic book convention people that just know. Everything's a deep cut. They really just know their stuff. So, so we have been separate. I don't think we've done a podcast together in like weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a while. But
the last one was when we went to the Royal Blood concert.
Yes, with Royal Blood. Oh, that hasn't been that bad. It feels like weeks, but that and then It. Keep forgetting we saw It.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there you go. That was a good one. So, all right. So let's get into this.
Let's get into things.
This is a catch-up episode. There's a lot of things to discuss. We have some issues. We have some... Before we talk about some movies, and we are going to delve into some television as well... We have a little bit of film threat business to take care of. We have some film threat business to take care of that involves, you know what? For once, it doesn't involve me. It actually involves Anthony Ray Bench and a review you wrote of The Legend of Ben Hall.
Yes.
Okay. And it's the film is directed by Matthew Holmes. And I mean, what's it about? What's the Legend of Ben Hall about?
So, honestly, I don't remember much of it because I watch so many movies for this website. They kind of just go in and out.
Right.
You know. But from what I remember, it was a Western about this legendary bushranger, and bushrangers were kind of outlaws. He's basically the Australian version of Billy the Kid. Mm-hmm. The Australians hold him in high regard, and I thought it was the movie's job to explain why. I'm not from Australia. I'm not familiar with what the Legend of Ben Hall is. My gripes about the movie were the acting quality was really, really poor.
Well, wait, before you get, before you get into your opinion about the movie, someone didn't like your opinion. Oddly enough, the director of the film, Matthew Holmes, and he saw fit to not only post a comment, he sent an email to us that I just think that we should read it. And in the spirit of, you know, Film Threat, when it was in print, we used to have a column called Hate Mail. Maybe this is also why I'm really not as affected as most others are by like weird sort of threatening, bullying stuff on the internet. Because in the early days of Film Threat, I kind of invited it and came up at least with my own way of diffusing it. Mm-hmm. Right. There's got to be a way to diffuse that kind of thing, which is hit it head on. It's not necessarily mean, but just sort of call out, you know, we have differences of opinion. We're all different people. So there you go. So obviously differences of opinion are going to come up.
Yep.
And typical of when you wash your car, it rains. If you start a podcast, you can hear a leaf blower, which is you could maybe hear in the background. I don't know. That's
maybe
for you people. That's an Easter egg. They call that an Easter egg. It's not a flaw. There's a leaf blower right outside the door. So, but let's get into this Legend of Ben Hall. Matthew Holmes, the director, sent us this letter. I'm just going to read the letter and we'll get into, you know, what was in the review. So, guys, today I saw your review on the Legend of Ben Hall. Wait, shouldn't I do this in like an Australian accent?
Good luck.
Let me start over. I got to do this in an Australian accent. Guys, today I saw your review on the Legend of Ben Hall. On your website by Anthony Ray Bench. I'm the film's director/writer. I just want to say that is without a doubt the most distasteful, mean, and underhanded review I have ever read or any film, let alone my own film. This kind of film bashing is so unnecessary and undeserved. Fair enough, you didn't like the film. It's not for everyone. But why drag it through the mud so spitefully? Well, that's sounding kind of British.
Yeah. Right,
back to the... Okay. Filmmakers like me work their arses off in extremely difficult circumstances to produce our films underfunded, understaffed, and battling an industry that wants to squash us before we start. We're the first to admit our films are not perfect, but we're out there in trenches doing our best making films only to have critics like you shit all over it for your own... and your readers' amusement. We read the reviews on our film. It bloody hurts to read that stuff. We're not robots, you know? Regardless whether you like the film or not, me and my crew don't deserve that. Pathetic. Matthew Holmes, Two Tone Pictures, Party Limited. Okay, so that's his review.
Yeah.
Now, I have some really specific thoughts on this. My first
I do too.
My first thought being... it's a really dumb thing to send a letter like this, which is why I think the only way to, you know, is really just start, like read this like out loud and just like was the whole point of hate mail was to post that kind of stuff. But I have some other specific thoughts. I just don't think it's a great, like, look, I've made films myself. Mm-hmm. I've gotten good reviews. I've gotten bad reviews.
Yeah.
But I would never send an email or post a comment on a website attacking the website and the opinion. I'd say, fuck it, move on. Look at something else because I mean, if your movie's getting a lot of reviews, you take the good with the bad. But I mean, Richard Linklater once said to me, we had this whole conversation about what he thinks of reviews, and he feels he prefers to read the negative. The positive reviews tend to just repeat each other. After a while, it's sort of like a group think. They just all start to sound alike. He said he prefers the negative reviews because it's the only way he learns.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
It's the only way he learns, which is what, you know, so, but having said that, I believe that now, and just so you know, the way I responded to this guy, I told him, I'm sorry you didn't like the review.
Yeah.
And we'll address this on the podcast because I just didn't want to write a long-winded letter that could be edited or whatnot, like, or he could cut it or put, I mean, I didn't want to get into thing.
It's not worth the effort, really.
It's not worth the effort.
You have way more stuff going on.
Plus, I think that
on
we
the other
address,
hand, I don't.
Yeah, well, I think we can address it more fully here on the podcast. So you have a statement, and I'd like to say a few words after that, but I'd like to hear your statement, and I know this is really important to you. So Anthony, you have the floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my first response was I wanted to just bash him and make him look like an idiot. But he did have some really, really good points. And, you know, it is hard to make a movie. So here's my official statement. We here at Film Threat pride ourselves on being film fans. You have to be in order to do what we do. We have been doing what we do since 1985, and we've been champions of independent cinema. I fully realize that making a film is a huge undertaking, and I sincerely salute all of those who have ever attempted it. I also have the utmost respect for those who have successfully made it happen. Despite the odds, whether it's big budget, studio blockbuster, or a shoestring budget indie film shot in a studio apartment, rest assured, there are always odds. I want to thank you sincerely for sending us your film, The Legend of Ben Hall, for review. I can only imagine how hard it was to make this movie, and again, I commend your cast and crew for their work ethic and their perseverance. With that said, mate, fuck you. Pull your head out of your ass, buddy.
Wait! Don't do it! Don't, Anthony!
My review was not a personal attack on you or your crew. I was critical of one of your actor's choices, and I made fun of that character's particularly annoying laugh. I didn't go after your family. I didn't do low blows. I said your movie featured characters that were boring. I didn't understand the relevance of the character that you were trying to shine light on. I wrote that your film was competently shot. That was, you know, a nice thing to say. I said it wasn't the worst film I've ever watched. Certainly wasn't the best. I was not as bad as you made me out to be. If you want to put your art out there for people to watch and experience, you're going to get people that don't like it, that don't appreciate it, that aren't on board with what you're trying to sell. That's just the fact of the matter. If you want to make films for yourself, then make a film. Don't show anybody. If your pride is that fragile, if your skin is that thin, don't be a filmmaker. Don't. Everybody gets critiqued. I've been critiqued for my reviews. It happens. You know what I do? I read it. I take to heart what I should change. I ignore all the hate. I ignore all the vitriol. And I move on. I don't think my review had that much hate or vitriol. I think it was fine. I think I was fair to your movie. I was a lot kinder than I should have been. But for you to get so up in arms and to throw such a little hissy fit and say that I should be ashamed for the review that I wrote. Fuck you, man. Like, you are such a giant whimpering pussy. That is all.
I like that you ended your statement, you're such a giant whimpering pussy. That was a very professional way to wrap that up. But look, I mean... I've done projects, and I've done books, mm-hmm. I've done films, I've done, you know, I mean, I could just tell you that anytime I'd done any sort of thing when I was at G4, there'd be like positive stuff on social media and negative stuff on social media, just sort of take it with a grain of salt. But I do understand that putting so much effort into a movie, I mean, it's not like a simple thing you do. I mean, it's years in the making and that kind of effort, but you can't have that thin of a skin. I mean, it's just, it's not going to serve you in the long run. And also I've always said, like, I don't want to give someone else that kind of power over me. Right.
So no, absolutely not.
I don't want someone to have power over me where they can write something negative and have it affect me so much. I kind of feel like that, to me, that's a mutant superpower that I forget sometimes that I have, is I don't give a fuck what people think of me, whether I'm doing a film project or a writing or book or this, whatever. Like, the thing is I'm my own worst critic. I mean, look, the movie that I co-wrote and produced, I give it myself like a C-, maybe a C+.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm critical of my own work.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think you went after him personally.
No, absolutely not.
You didn't go
after
him personally. I think the meanest thing you could say you said was the thing about the one guy's. But that's happened to me in a movie where someone makes a horrible choice.
Yeah.
And it's too much. But
I have the quote right here. Do you want me to read it?
Oh, yes. Let's read your mean quote.
So this is pertaining. One of the characters in the movie is named Jack Gilbert. And it's obvious that the kind of he was trying to go with the quirky Val Kilmer in Tombstone thing, where like he just steals the scene every time he's on, you know, on screen and with his, you know, kind of quirks and whatnot. He has this really annoying laugh, and the best I could do is just
like, oh, it's like that.
Yeah, it's so annoying. But I wrote in my review that it's like somebody dragging their long dirty fingernails against a chalkboard while fire ants chew on your genitals, and then your parents call to tell you that they're getting divorced and your brand new puppy ate a pan of brownies and died shitting itself.
I'm going to guess that it's so over the top that you were trying to be entertaining.
Yes.
Because
colorful. Yeah.
Right. Because, and I think that sometimes the most entertaining reviews are the ones of like, it's a bad movie, but that a lot of times that actually just makes me want to see the movie. But, but I feel like also Film Threat would not like a part. I believe that part of our mission is to support independent films.
Yeah.
But we're also not a rubber stamp. Just for to say every independent film that's made is great.
Absolutely. If you make a movie, like, that's great, but that doesn't automatically mean that we're going to give you a good review and we're going to hold you in high acclaim. Like, we understand that making film is hard, but that doesn't mean that you should automatically, you know,
but
get an award.
Like, it is like telling someone their baby's fucking ugly.
Yeah.
Like, you have an ugly, you have an ugly baby.
Sometimes
and
you just got to tell,
well,
sometimes you just got to do it.
Exactly. But I also think that, like, I've always argued, and we've talked about this amongst ourselves, is that you can't judge an indie film by the same criteria that you judge a studio movie, because a studio movie has no excuse to fail. It has, they've got, you know, mostly, they have, first of all, they have budget resources. I'm not going to say unlimited, but they have budget resources. Mm-hmm. They have marketing departments. They have professionals that are at the top of their game in every department, art department, cinematography, actors, you know, locations. So there's less of an excuse to fail. What I like to see is I like to see that bird with a broken wing that I want to like nurse back to health. And I want to see an indie movie that it's like, I can see the creativity through the production flaws. I think production flaws for indie films are forgivable because yes, they don't have the money. But on all other, there should be a vision behind it. There should be, whether it's a low budget, lo-fi sci-fi, whether it's a character-based drama, whether it's, you know, a Western about an Australian historical figure. It should have some sort of vision you can see through the flaws. But I do know what you mean about like a character. That, to me, that's like just a bad, I don't know, maybe it was a bad choice or maybe, I mean, who knows? But
I'm not attacking the guy personally. Like, if this guy, that's how he really laughs in real life. I'm sorry. I'm specifically going after the character. You know, well, I did not aim to be mean in this review. I meant to entertain. I meant to, you know, post my opinion of the film out there, which my opinion of the film was the acting was lackluster. I don't understand why this guy is supposed to be so important. And I think the movie fails because the movie is literally titled The Legend of Ben Hall. And I don't get what the big deal about Ben Hall is. There were no glaring technical issues with the film.
Yes, the rest of your review was pretty just milquetoast.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, yeah. But look, okay, so I just think that if you're a filmmaker, because I know some filmmakers listen to this podcast, I think that you gotta take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
You're going to get a bad review. You can't let it ruin your day. You can't let it ruin your day like a social media attack from some Russian bot.
Yeah,
it's mostly Russian bots, I think we've come to discover. But I also think that this could launch a war with Australia. It could spark.
Bring it on.
Yeah, well,
bring it on, Aussies. Come at me, bro.
You know what? At some point, we're gonna end up running to this filmmaker at a film festival, and we're just gonna have a beer and laugh over it because maybe he'll have learned. I feel like, you know what?
I hope so.
I feel like pain is how you learn.
Yeah.
Pain is, I mean this, like, with all sincerity, pain is how you learn. You're getting feedback. You got, you know, this is why, you know, look, you get a D or an E, or you get a failing grade in a class. That's painful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reflection on you. I want to do better.
Yeah.
Right. You screw up a relationship and something goes poorly in a relationship. You make better choices in that. You know, you any sort of pain in life, you know, that's how you learn, that pain. So without that, it's you're not going to improve. You have to take the lesson from that and move on. And I think the lesson for this filmmaker is don't be sending letters to Film Threat because we'll fucking read it and make fun of you and discuss it. And you know what's so funny? Now, you know what's so funny? The irony is tons of people are going to now seek out that movie because we've had this conversation. I want to see if it's as shitty as Film Threat said.
It's not even that shitty. It's forgettable.
That's actually a problem that I would have.
That's the worst.
When I read your review, I was just like, oh, this is sort of a middle ground review. It's a middling review. That's the worst kind of indie movie to be, is sort of like, you're not offensive. But you're not horrible, but you're not great. You're just in the middle, which is like which is the worst place to be.
Going back to
you're like the beige of movies. You offend no one. You're there on the wall in a horrible, you know, paint, but whatever.
So. But going back to what you said, you know, this is somebody who spent, you know, probably months, even, you know, maybe a year working on this film.
He might have spent days working on the movie.
That's days. You never know.
Now we're like, now we're getting getting a little mean.
But when you put it out there, you're getting fresh eyes. You're not getting somebody who's seen the film before. You're not getting somebody who knows, you know, you as a filmmaker and you as a person. Like, you're getting somebody who's walking into this blind. And they might reveal stuff that you never thought about. And that might make you a better filmmaker. You got to take criticism and either just discard it, you know, like water on a duck's back, or take a talk.
But all right, so... But that's whatever. I mean, that's just this is the way. This is you take the good with the bad. Okay.
For the record, nothing personal against you, Maddie. Like
nothing.
Just didn't care for your movie.
That's the thing is, I was looking for something personal, and I didn't see anything that was a personal attack. But I understand, you know, having your movie said it looks ugly and is disgusting. And not worth anyone's time. Okay, we got a lot of movies to talk about this week, so we're gonna movies and maybe some TV shows. There's some TV things, but can I just say I recently celebrated a birthday.
You did. Happy birthday, Chris Gore.
I'm not a person who really gives. I really don't care that much about my birthday.
He would not shut up about it. As soon as I got here, it's my birthday. What'd you bring me?
I don't really care that much about my birthday, but for my birthday, I happened to go see Hamilton. And can I just say, I know, which is like, it just opened in Los Angeles. And I'll just say, I loved it. Maybe not for the same reasons that other people loved it. I mean, what I saw it as, it's sort of an extended episode of Scholastic Rock. If you remember Scholastic Rock from Saturday morning cartoons, when there was a Saturday morning cartoons, and you can find Scholastic Rock videos. It's basically Scholastic Rock about Alexander Hamilton, who was considered one of the founding fathers and integral to early American history, the formation of the United States and the 13 colonies and whatnot. So it's fascinating because the stories in it are true. And one of the best things about it is they do these rap battles debating big issues of the day, with Thomas Jefferson against Alexander Hamilton, and it's freaking hilarious. So it's incredibly well written. The songs are amazing, but it really is like, this is Scholastic Rock. This is probably why I like this so much. It's something familiar, and it's hip hop and rap, and it's fantastic. So if you can get a ticket,
you probably can't,
but you could go just try to see it in some form. It's well worth it. But we have some movies to talk about, so let's launch right in. I have been so gallivanting and traveling that I haven't seen a lot. You know what? I'm going to talk about two movies that I saw on the plane.
Sure.
In all my travels. I happened to catch a movie called Wilson, starring Woody Harrelson, it's one of those things that indie film does really well, right? Indie film does not do well big budget Transformers movie, but an indie film can do well. You take a movie and it's about that character. It's not so much about the events in the film, but it's about putting a character who has an awkward social tic, putting him into situations, and it's like, oh no, this is going to be bizarre. And Wilson is a lot like that. It reminded me of that movie with Sally Field which
it's not coming to my head.
Yeah, exactly. See, the Sally Field film where her movie is all about, it's all about her character, right? It's all about her like weird, the weirdness about her, where she's this like older
hello
woman.
My name is Doris.
Yeah, hello, that's my name is Doris. It reminds me of that. And again, a movie like named after the character Doris, right? So this is in that vein. In fact, it'd be a great double feature as Wilson and Hello, My Name is Doris. But Wilson is this dude, he's a weird dude, like an older dude who has like this woman in his past, and discovers that the two of them actually had he revisits this old relationship, finds out that she has a kid that has been adopted, and then they end up reaching out to the kid, and they discover who the kid is and try to reform a relationship with her, and it goes horribly wrong, and it's hysterical. I mean, I highly recommend this film just because it's one of those that I missed. I think we all missed. Because I didn't really hear a lot about it, but it's all, he's a guy that is way too frank. he's sitting next to someone on the bus and will just say the most inappropriate remarks that are, I guess, to a stranger, inappropriate. I mean, to a close friend, if you have that kind of trust, you can be brutally truthful. So he's brutally truthful with everyone he talks to, and it just every single step of the way gets him in trouble.
He just doesn't have a filter.
No filter with this guy. And it's
I know people like
it's funny as hell. I don't want to describe specific scenes, just other than to say Woody Harrelson is amazing in it. It's a film that was overlooked. Why? Because I saw it on a plane. And Woody Harrelson, we're actually going to see this fall, Rob Reiner directed Woody Harrelson in the movie LBJ. Mm-hmm. And when I was at Politicon, I went to the LBJ panel and they showed a scene. I didn't know it was Woody Harrelson.
Oh, wow.
There's a scene from LBJ where, and this was famous that he would do this, he would shit with the bathroom door open. So LBJ is sitting there, Woody Harrelson playing him, and he's got facial makeup on where you don't even recognize it's Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
He's on the toilet and he's just talking to guys outside the room about like stuff, but it's like his conversation is just going. So it's a great scene. I think LBJ looks incredible, and I think this could tee up Woody Harrelson for, who knows, an Oscar nomination, because he's certainly someone that has been overlooked. I think you take for granted the fact that Woody Harrelson is just going to be entertaining to watch in every movie.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. Wilson is worth checking out. Now, you've seen some films. What have you seen recently?
I have.
Seen some of the indies that have been submitted to Film Threat for review. And which one are you going to poop on today?
It's actually funny that you kind of segued into that. This one's called Patient 62, and it's about a bartender who gains superpowers while he's investigating the disappearance of his little sister. It's a Canadian independent film. It's sci-fi thriller. Going back to judging independent films a little less harshly than the studio films and everything like that, like I agree with you 100%.
I know I didn't say less harshly. That wasn't that
differently.
Like, you have to take into account that indie films have limited resources.
Yeah.
You can't say freaking The Legend of Ben Hall isn't good as one of Michael Bay's movies. Michael Bay's movies cost $200+ million with huge marketing budgets. You can't, it's scale, right? You can't judge them on the same scale. You have to say this indie movie had these resources, these things. Is there a vision within that? And there are people, like I'll just point out one of my favorite classic indie movies, right? The Puffy Chair by the Duplass brothers. Right? Mark Duplass Mark and Jay are in it. One of my favorite indie movies of all time. I believe it's still on Netflix. I still have a standard def DVD of it somewhere. I love that. And it's just shot with like a high eight. It's like whatever they have. But through the flaws of it, because it's not perfect, it's not perfectly shot, it's not perfect cinematography, it doesn't matter. The story is interesting. It's compelling. A compelling story is, do I want to know what happens next? Do I want to know what happens next? Do I want to know what happens next? And if you're saying that you don't care, then that the filmmaker has not done their job.
Yeah.
So to me, that's what I mean. It's not about being less harsh. It's about considering the circumstances of that filmmaker.
Yeah.
Right.
There are independent films that don't have a budget that get around it by, you know, kind of treating it as a joke a little bit. You get what I'm saying? Like, you know, or we have a character that has a superpower. We're going to limit showing his superpower, like that sort of thing. There's ways to get around it. This,
So what is it? What's the story of it?
I told you the story. It's about a bartender who gets superpowers looking for his sister.
Sorry, I took us off on a segue. That's my fault.
Yeah. But what I was getting into about, you know, judging independent film versus studio differently, and you said it a lot better than I did, is that I think you kind of have to give and take with any independent film. If it doesn't have the budget to do special effect, it better have strong characters. If it doesn't have the actors to do strong characters, it better be an entertaining premise and so on and so forth and everything like that. This, unfortunately, was a very standard, almost boring story that's been done 100 times before and 100 times better. you know, a guy, normal guy, gets superpowers and everything like that. There's nothing special about it. There's nothing interesting about it. The acting is very, very weak. The makeup effects are bad. The dialogue is terrible. But to its credit, it is entertaining enough in a bad movie type of way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's short enough to where I would definitely recommend it as one of those movies where you invite a bunch of people over, you get some beers, and you watch it and kind of get some laughs and stuff like that. It's entertaining. It's just not good, if that makes sense. The special effects are so bad. Apparently, energy drinks in this movie make the guy explode.
What?
Yeah. The science is so ridiculously flawed.
Look, I love ridiculous stuff because, like, that's the thing.
But it's played seriously,
well,
though.
My taste is varied, you know? Yeah. Look, I like anything from your award-winning Oscar film that's very earnest to a trauma film.
Yeah.
Right? You know, but like each of those movies create their own rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
here's a good example. A character gets shot at the end in the leg. The very next scene, there is no indication of a wound and she's running.
What?
Yeah.
Well,
stuff like that, well, you know,
I mean, I think that, yes, you have to create rules, respect your own rules, and you can break the rules with, you know, you have to be careful when you break the rules that you've set up. You've got to introduce some new element. And usually you'll see filmmakers set up a rule for a world, and then there'll be something that breaks a rule in the third act.
Yeah.
That's pretty common with a movie. It's like, oh, I didn't know blah, 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 and then this blah, 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 new rule that I created to resolve whatever the conflict is. So in any case.
And another thing that I think really like bad like sci-fi action movies always kind of tend to lean on this. The bad guys are just bad guys because they need bad guys. There is no rhyme or reason to why they're doing what they're doing, why they are who they are. Like, it's just, okay, that guy's a douche. Like, as a film fan, I want to know why that guy's a douche. I want to know, you know, is he nice to some people or is he just an asshole to everybody? Like that sort of thing. And I mean, a lot of movies, they just strictly like this guy is the bad guy, the end.
Well, I mean, that to me, the flaw in that is a character being one dimensional.
Yeah, very one dimensional characters.
You don't know the
backstory
of the Joker in The Dark Knight, and it's unnecessary because there are clearly layers to that character. We see as he tells you and lies about his backstory each time he tells it, you see that there are layers. There's a darkness there that is, to explain it is to destroy it. So.
And the actor can be menacing. Here, the actors aren't capable of that. When they're trying to be tough, it comes off as cheesy and kind of forced.
All right, so you're taking a shit on another movie. So there you go.
Apparently. Well,
so we'll read the letter email from the filmmaker on the next episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's. All right. So moving on to. I know this is. I'm late to the party, but I saw John Wick 2 on the flight. And can I say, first of all, I just love Keanu Reeves.
Love him.
I don't care. Keanu Reeves with a dog and a dead wife, it's perfect. And I love that there's no romance is really not a big part of this film. And John Wick 2, here's the, because I think that the film, the story of the film is bad and the script is terrible because it was not believable. The dialogue was, I was predicting as I'm watching the movie, I go, I know what that guy's going to say. And then I would just say it.
Yeah.
I was able to just predict what the dialogue was going to be almost every time. It was so cliche. Although I do like that the dialogue is few and far between. There's not a lot of dialogue in the film, but the couple things that stood out to me, one, there's no sense of humor in this movie. There is not once where there's a sense of humor. It's just dark, serious, dark. Here's why this movie succeeds more than it fails. And it doesn't fail very much. And the things that it fails at aren't particularly important for the audience it's targeted to. It's a video game.
Mm-hmm.
To kill that many people in that many public spaces and not have like his picture on the television everywhere is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous that, I mean, there are fight scenes that happen in public places, fight scenes that happen like on subways. There's like apparently some secret order of like assassins that live among us that can just be activated at any point to kill people. It's bizarre rules. But watching Keanu Reeves do this sort of ballet of violence that is like, it's the kind of energy you get from playing a really violent video game. It's that like, yeah, do it, kill. But I feel like a lot of the deaths are unjustified. I mean, many of these low-level hoodlums have families and girlfriends. I'm sure some of them are fathers or mothers out there with, they're just trying to make a buck. Does he have to brutally murder every single person that he encounters? It's almost ridiculous. And these sort of the fear that people in this underworld have of him, when you mention his name, it's like he's a superhero or something. And he also, like, to reference something you mentioned from Patient 62, like, he's stabbed and shot and he's completely able to run around and be fine. It seems to seek no medical attention, and every wound that Keanu Reeves, John Wick, encounters doesn't seem to affect him. So, you know, even with all the, I love the movie. I love the movie even with the flaws. And I think that you mentioned earlier when you said, when I told you we were going to talk about this, because I just wanted to mention it. Yeah. And I saw it on a flight. My time has just been bizarre with travel and whatnot lately. So my film going has been lax. Although I did see Dunkirk as well, which I thought was fantastic.
We talked about Dunkirk on the other podcast.
Yeah. But I Dunkirk's another one I'd like to see that again.
Yeah.
And John Wick, like, it, they should just make a John Wick video game, right?
They have a VR experience.
Yeah. But I mean, like, a video game where, you know, he just goes around and kills people.
But it's interesting because you said basically there is no, you know, there is no special dialogue. There is no, you know, there's not much to it, but
it doesn't matter. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. It's fun
to watch.
It's fun. It's entertaining.
People. Yeah.
It has that those outlandishly choreographed action sequences.
Everything's
that
over
are
the
amazing.
Top. Everything's over the top.
And that elevates it. That pulls it up. Like, you can have a movie that has terrible dialogue, but if the action scenes are on point, great. You can have a movie where the action scenes are terrible, but if the dialogue and the characters are compelling,
I feel like it's like a resource management thing. It's like,
absolutely,
as the competency and amazingness of the action and violence goes up, the quality of the dialogue goes down. So you're like, you're trying to like turn these dials, but you only have X amount of HP to work with. That's hit points for those that are movie nerds, but not video game nerds. Or exactly. So those resource management, and you have to decide as a filmmaker based on the resources you have what to put the most energy into. But in spite of the flaws, loved it. So, and I know it's out and available for purchase. So now you have another movie to talk about.
Yes. This movie is called This Is Us. And it's a romantic drama, and it's a very low budget shoestring movie, directed by Jerry J. White III and written by Raymond Kramer, who also stars as the main character, Brendan, or one of the main characters in it. It's just a really well-done movie. It's basically about this...
Wait a second. Can I pause you for a second? I wonder if you're going to get a letter from him. Anthony, I listened to your review on the Film Threat podcast and read on filmthreat.com your review. I'd like to thank you. You know, you never get, very rarely do we receive, everyone really wants, I think this is what's actually, because I go through all the email, right? Mm. And I see that like everyone really, really wants a review from Film Threat.
Yeah.
And once they've gotten it, they're like a one night, they're like the dudes in a one night stand, right? Who just walk away. It's like, wait, we did what you wanted. We did the review. You're not.
Yeah.
No, thank you. That's it. Like, or we did what you wanted. We did the review. It didn't turn out what you liked, but we did, you know, so I don't know. It's not like we're just some, you know, we're not a service where you order a thing. Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes behind maintaining a site like this. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like we only hear from people when they're angry with us or when they want something from us. But when we've done something nice, like the amazing positive review, Keanu Reeves is not going to contact me to thank me about, Chris, I was listening to the Film Threat podcast.
Whoa.
Loved your review. And he's not going to do it. Although if he did that, I think that'd be amazing. Yeah. So this is good. So a positive review, finally, from Anthony Ray Bench.
Yeah, I'm such a negative Nancy.
Okay, but so get right into it. I'm sorry to go off of this sort of tangent.
No worries. It basically, the genius behind This Is Us is how it's told. It kind of jumps from from instance to instance, kind of showing different points of their relationship.
So does it jump back and forth in time? How does it work?
All over time, not just back and forth. Just like basically the premise is this woman, her name's Danielle. She's played by Jessica Lynn Parsons, she's a fantastic actress. She's breaking up with her boyfriend. And then it jumps to a scene where it's the boyfriend revealing that he cheated on her. And then it jumps back to, like, you know, them first meeting and how they first met. It just kind of goes all over the place. But the way it does, it's just such, like, a perfect, like, showcase of what relationships are. Like, there are good times and there are bad times. And it's just, it blends those times really, really well. And at a certain point in time, she wakes up and she realizes that she has the ability to change these instances. And she does so in various ways. Like, she kind of tells him, like, I know what's going to happen. You're going to cook me breakfast. I'm going to forgive you, you know, but tomorrow I'm going to end up hating you again. Like, it's these really just short kind of moments in a relationship that just feels so real.
Is it one of those things, like, in a relationship, like, after it ends, where you go through in your head and it's your memory and perception of what happened? But yeah. Wait, I always think, like, oh, fuck, I should have said that.
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
Oh, I should have said that. So it's like she's going through going, she's saying the things she should have said in the moment, because that's, like, the worst. Yeah. I always hate that when it's like, I had the best joke and I thought of it after. Ugh, I hate that.
Yeah. So, and
that's going to be my new thing, is to say, that sounds so awful. I'm going to be criticized on a podcast review website that's going to say, you know, it was the way that Gore always said, that bugged me. It was like a,
it's like your parents getting divorced and your puppy eating a pan of brownies and chewing itself to death.
Yes. But no, this sounds really, that's a relatable thing.
Yeah, very relatable. I mean, every relationship I've been in, I'm like, you know, I wish I would have ended it sooner, or I wish I would have, you know, said this when we fought, or I wish I would have, you know, fought harder. Like, there's all these regrets, and this movie really kind of examines, like, the choices we make. And there's this really beautiful scene where it goes back to the first time they met, and we see how it happens. And then she's presented this opportunity to change the way how they met, and they meet at this party. And she decides that, you know, all the pain is not worth it. She's going to walk away and not talk to this guy. And she goes out to her car. And all of a sudden she realizes, like, yeah, you know, you're stopping yourself from getting hurt. He's not going to cheat on you. But you're also robbing yourself of all the happy memories. And, like, she's realizing, like, those things aren't going to happen now. And she, like, breaks down. And, like, there he is. And he's just like, you know.
This sounds really good,
it's,
man.
So good. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Shoestring budget movie. It looks phenomenal.
But see, this is what indie film does well. Mm-hmm. Indie film does not do production value well. I mean, not to say that there aren't, and there are clever ways to, you know, include production, really high standards of production value.
Yeah.
Indie film does well, I believe, better than Hollywood is ideas.
Yeah.
And I feel that an indie film centered around a clever idea is gold. And those are the ones that I love to champion.
It has a very dreamlike quality, because it's not like she, you know, is going like, I have the power to change history. You know, it doesn't really play that up. It's just almost like everything that's happening is a dream. And it, you know, like, I really applaud it for kind of taking that, you know, that step, because that is very kind of, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? A gimmick. Like, oh, I can change what happened. And, you know, like, it doesn't really focus
just
on,
like,
that.
Just like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of this movie.
With, you know, Kate Winslet and Jim Carrey, is a movie that I return to. I think it's one of those movies, like, I have to watch it once a year just to, you know, recognize how depressing relationships can be. So that when you're in one that's really working and good, you really want to hang on to that, because, boy, the Eternal Sunshine is, like, everything about bad about relationships.
Yeah.
So, but it's so cleverly told, right? Like, yes, the breakdown of it starts out good and then it goes bad. Moo, relationship. You know, like, but the way that story plays out and how clever it is, that it's this, you know, wiping your mind of all the memories of a particular person. It's almost like the when you're end a relationship, you're on Facebook and you untag yourself on all the photos. It's just like that. So so yeah. This I really love that. So now I want to see that movie because you've given it a stellar and positive review, which I don't expect from Anthony Ray Bench, who shits on every movie.
I do not shit on every movie.
According to the country of Australia.
Yeah.
So
no, it's a fantastic movie.
They cool. Don't say anymore. Don't say anymore. Now you convince me. I want to see it.
Can we
talk about can we talk about TV for a moment?
Sure.
I have a couple TV things that I want to talk about. Firstly, the new season of American Horror Story started, and it's incredible. So, you know, as with every season of American Horror Story, it has basically the same cast in a new scenario, and this season focuses on the election. It's like it starts off with election night and seeing it from two different sides of the fence, right? Like people seeing it going, I can't believe Hillary lost, to people going, Trump. And then, you know, like excited about Trump. And then and they use footage from the news. It's amazing. It's so it just really recaptures that night, but then gets into this weird cult of clowns. And I feel like when it comes to clowns, like I'm not a fan of clowns, not a fan of the clowns. Clowns are not popular, but yeah, there's like a cult of serial killers going around, dressed as clowns. I don't want to give too much away other than do not miss this season of American Horror Story. It looks epic. The fact that it's kind of kicked off by the election is very timely.
Can I ask a quick question about it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Are you a fan of the previous seasons?
Some of them.
Okay, because I've tried to get into that show and it is just not my thing. I cannot stand it.
Then you shouldn't watch it.
I shouldn't
watch
it.
But I'm telling you, from having watched the first episode of the new season,
all right,
that you should check it out. Now, okay. The other thing that needs to be discussed, Twin Peaks, the finale, the final two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that our friend Charles DeLazarica, who has appeared numerous times on the Film Threat podcast, said it right. He sent out a tweet, a post, the night that the finale, where he basically said that he felt like the second to last episode was like the end, and then the last episode was like the beginning of a new mystery. So that ended all the conflicts in all the previous episodes, and was really like, I just think that if you started watching Twin Peaks thinking, you know, with certain expectations, that's why you don't like it.
Yeah.
Is because you come to it with these expectations of it being this mainstream, you know, thing that is going to like hit all the beats, and there's going to be entrances for every character. And we've talked about this before. It's like, I think the worst thing in the world would be like if J.J. Abrams did Twin Peaks and then it was like, here's everything that you wanted. Okay. Nothing original or interesting. Bye. But David Lynch basically said, I'm going to play with this concept. You're going to get some of the stuff from Twin Peaks. You're going to get some cool indie, you know, experimental film stuff using techniques, you know, digital filmmaking special effects that are just bizarre stuff. It's Twin Peaks is more like a mashup of Eraserhead and Lost Highway, and Twin Peaks kind of, it's like a mishmash of all of that. And I think it's incredible. It's sort of like, basically they should just rename the Twin Peaks the David Lynch Show, which I think then maybe people's expectations would be in measured, because to think that it's going to be another season of Twin Peaks with some new mystery to solve is stupid. I think it's brilliant. It pushes the boundaries. It defies expectations. And I think the final two episodes are episode eight to me was still, wait, was it episode eight? It was the episode with that had the nuclear explosion and the Abraham Lincoln guy going around killing people and all that. And there's, everyone sort of had these theories. I think all those theories are bullshit. I think they're bullshit and they're all valid in the sense that it doesn't matter. It's you read into it. That's the whole point of being experimental. Like if you're trying to make sense of it, you're losing the point, because too much of our entertainment is made to make sense and the world doesn't make sense. And I only say that because, hey, look at the world right now. Nothing makes sense anymore. So David Lynch's Twin Peaks is in line with how things really are. Not things just don't make sense, and we don't have all the answers, and there are mysteries in life, and things aren't like wrapped up in some like pat little ending like everyone would like, where it's like, well, that was great. Everything was resolved and I loved it. Next thing that I'll binge watch. Like, no, how about something that, you know, makes you think about our current circumstances? Not that Twin Peaks does that, but it has the potential to. At least I believe it is counter to almost everything that's on television at the moment. I'm talking about dramatic, you know, long form storytelling. I really even hate calling it TV, because TV is like saying like, oh, cute, look, TV made a movie. No, it's kind of condescending. I feel like what's developed, there's so much good television. You look at something like Game of Thrones, which I'm a huge fan of. We've talked about, but we haven't done anything on Game of Thrones specifically. But I mean, I will say that, like, it's such a satisfying experience to watch Game of Thrones. It's like, this is what Star Wars should be. This epic, this grand, this much of a setup for what's going to be the ultimate battle in the final season with only 6 episodes left. It's long form storytelling. It's not TV. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And with that, I'm Chris Gore, blah, 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 blah. You've heard it a million times. Who cares? You're what again?
I'm Anthony Ray Bench.
Yeah.
This
all
game
right.
Cheats.
Just, all right. Let's, you know what? Let's get out of here.
Let's get out.
He's got a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a knife. Just kids having fun.